Blog Talk Radio.
The opinions and views expressed by the host and guest are not necessarily the views and opinions of the Blake Radio Network. Broadcasting to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul.
Hi, this is Dr. Daniels, and welcome to Healing with Dr. Daniels here on Blake Radio at Rainbow Soul. And today is Tuesday, July 22nd. It is 6 p.m. Eastern Time. And the title of today is The Rape of American Woman. This is truly a tragedy. You know, in historical times, they have all these stories about how the whole women of a particular country were raped and what a horrible thing it was. And I remember being a student in high school thinking, oh, my God, thank goodness that isn't happening here in America. And today what I'm going to talk about is the mass rape of American women and other cultural practices. Now, millions of women, American women, are raped every year. They weep, and their men stand by helplessly. Marriages are destroyed, lives are ruined, and the rapist in a white coat gets paid. So today, I'm going to talk to you about the crime of the century and how you can stop it. It's very simple to do. And that noise, by the way, you're hearing in the background is the monsoons here in Panama. They should pass momentarily. The show is coming to you from Panama, and you know, in the jungles, things are not always perfect. So we do, from time to time, have deafening rainfall. So the show is actually being recorded as well on my end, and hopefully it'll be a clearer recording. So let's talk about rape. In order to figure out if you're being raped, you need to know what it is. And that's important. So we're gonna start with that. So rape is sexual touching of another person without that person's consent. And so then you have to get into sexual touching. So basically touching any of a person's sexual organs. So in a woman, that would be the breast or vagina, and a man, that would be the penis or testicles. So this is what rape is. So it's this unwanted sexual contact or sexual contact without consent. So what's consent? Consent is said to be given when a person is age of maturity. That would be somewhere between 18 and 21. So you have a 21-year-old person here who says yes. And the circumstances under which they say yes is, one, they say yes freely without duress. They're not being threatened. They're not being in any way compelled or forced to submit to the sexual touching. And the sexual touching is not done under false pretext. So when the person says, I want to touch your sexual organs, they're not lying to you about the reason or the motivation for that. Okay. So if your consent is either one and not obtained, or two, obtained under false pretexts, then you have been raped. That's the size of it. That's what it comes down to. Now, today's topic is really, rape is a serious topic. So I'm going to really limit myself to government sources. So I'm going to only quote sources from the government or from medical journals online. And also I'm going to share my personal experiences with, as to what happens in the medical profession and what happened in medical school. So let's start with medical school. Now, in medical school, it's very curious because they somehow felt the need to tell us about legal touching, illegal touching, and criminal touching of human beings. And we were told that the kind of touching we were engaging in as doctors was actually criminal if a non-doctor engaged in the same type of contact. And this is a special privilege, this touching of people's sexual parts, conferred upon doctors only because the touching is a benefit to the person being touched, that would be the patient, and the information gained from this sexual touching is used to improve that individual's health. And when this ceases to be the case, when the sexual touching knowingly does not provide information to promote the health of the individual being touched, then the person has been raped or they have been violated. And so, sounded good to us at the time. Seems a reasonable thing. But then, we had the OBGYN actual courses. And when we had these courses, some medical students, myself included, I felt a little uncomfortable touching people in a sexual way. I was a little more concerned about whether or not we really were getting some useful information here. Was this really necessary? Did we really need to undress these people and poke stuff into women's vaginas and fondle men's testicles? Was this necessary? And there were some people in the medical school class who had an extreme eagerness for this, who were really looking forward to this, who were very excited about making as much sexual contact as possible with patients. You know, one reason to argue for the need to train doctors and to have formal schools for doctors is that a rigorous screening needs to be in place so that rapists and voyeurs do not go into OBGYN, and pedophiles don't go into pediatrics. It's shocking that no such screening of any type takes place in medical school. None. At no point does a professor say to a guy, you know, I think you're really getting too much excitement out of these pelvic exams. I think you should go into something else like internal medicine. That observation was never made by a professor, even though peers, you know, my classmates would whisper, you know, so-and-so is going into obstetrics and gynecology. Oh, my God. I think that would be really awful for those poor women. And that was the end of it. And the person in question would go into obstetrics and gynecology and, you know, who knows what actually happened. I'm sure it wasn't altogether pleasant. But this is the point, that there's a lot of opportunity for sexual touching and a lot of discretion on the part of individuals, doctors or practitioners, in terms of maximizing their sexual contact with patients. Now, the other issue is, when you get down to it, the practices in obstetrics and gynecology are so brutal, so abusive, that the field actually attracts individuals who want to dominate women, violate women, and torture them. And this is accomplished merely by following the standard of care. That's it. Follow the standard of care. And so we're asked to perform to women, for example, pap smears. Now, a pap smear is taking a sample of cells from the cervix are the opening of a woman's womb or uterus. This is the place where the baby grows inside the uterus. And so the opening is called the cervix, and we take samples of those cells there, ostensibly to detect cervical cancer early, and ostensibly to remove cells that might in the future turn into cancer. Now, the truth of the matter is that out of 100,000 women, 6 could be expected to die of cervical cancer if they're not screened. If they are screened, 3 could be expected to die of cervical cancer. So what are we saying? What we're saying is, at best, 3 women in 100,000 could be expected to benefit from pap smear screening. Because a precancerous lesion that never would have turned into cancer, to biopsy that, do surgery on it, freeze it, laser it, all the many procedures doctors have at their disposal, is actually not a benefit to the woman if, 1, she would never have gotten cervical cancer, or 2, she would never have lived long enough to die of it, and she might have died of, say, something else. So then, we can say that a pap smear done for the purpose of detecting cervical cancer might be considered a form of rape. Now, when would it be considered a form of rape? Well, it turns out that there's actually discussion in the field of medicine as to whether or not pap smears are beneficial and how and under what schedule. Now, when I went to medical school back in the dark ages, pap smears were felt to be necessary every single year. Every single year, a woman was supposed to get a pap smear, and it was supposed to start at a particular age and really go out in perpetuity with no particular end date. Now, since those times, it has been determined that a pap smear every 5 years is more than adequate to protect women from cervical cancer. Remember, just because you get a pap smear, just because you get all the sexual touching and intervention, it does not mean that you will not die of cervical cancer, because 6 women a year, 6 out of 100,000 will die if not screened, and 3 die anyway if screened, which means that those ones who died anyway, even though they were screened, did not benefit from that screening. And so this is what we're left with. So if you're OBGYN is recommending pap smears every single year, and you have a normal pap smear, then that is inappropriate sexual touching. You might want to call it recreational sexual touching without your consent, and basically constitutes rape. Now, why would it say it's without your consent? Because, I mean, you did make the appointment, you know, you drove to the office, you parked the car, maybe you paid for parking, you waited in the lobby. So it would be called inappropriate sexual touching without your consent because you were misled as the true motivation for this touching. So the motivation for this touching was not to improve your health, because your health can't be improved by annual pap smears, but the motivation was otherwise. So it had to be some other motivation because there's no medical benefit. Now, these guidelines for pap smears are relatively recent. So back in the 1980s, it was recommended that women get pap smears every year. In fact, pelvic exams every year. It was known as the annual pelvic. Now, I was in medical school for 4 years. And in medical school, a lot of pelvic exams were done. I'm telling you, a lot of ladies went through those clinics. And the 4 years I was in medical school, that would be 1979 to 1983, I did not detect a single case of cervical cancer, and I'm not sure that any of my colleagues did either. In fact, because the lack of new cases was so severe that they had to have a special clinic of women who had had abnormal pap smears in the past and have them come back on a more frequent basis in order for the medical students to even see a person with an abnormal, I won't say abnormal, but a cancerous pap smear. So this is an intervention whose benefit is minimal. And what can ladies do? Ladies can do what they did back in 2006, 2008, stop showing up. 2006, 2008 revealed another area of rape. Now, I just want to say that this pap smear thing is not a trivial matter. The speculums hurt. We used to use cold metal speculums. We now use plastic ones. It's a fairly uncomfortable exam. And then if you follow it up with a good pelvic, where the doctor reaches in real deep and presses on the uterus and the ovaries, this is a fairly painful event. And I would dare say a woman who's been actually raped on the street might not have had as bad an experience. And so here it is. Physicians group discourages routine pelvic examination. This is a Journal of the American Medical Association, and this is pretty recent, hot off the press, February 2014. And what do these doctors say? It says, most women are accustomed to the uncomfortable ritual. And this is what they say, ritual. Now, what's a ritual? A ritual is basically a religious ceremony, not something that's of material benefit. And so the American College of Physicians has a new guideline. It says, time to make the procedure a thing of the past for women without any symptoms or concerns. So if you come in, you got something dripping out of your vagina, and you want to know what it is, sure, a doctor's got to take a look down there, sort that out. But a woman who has no complaints, everything is going fine, and these doctors are suggesting pregnant women might need routine pelvic. But regular women do not. Women, if you're not pregnant, don't need a routine pelvic. Anything, and a pelvic exam is when a doctor reaches his hands in, feels a woman's uterus, and feels her ovaries. So if one has no complaints, there is absolutely no reason to submit to such an exam. Now, they say women should continue to receive routine cervical cancer screening. That means the pap smear. So what you're saying is insert the speculum, yes. Open it, give a little brush there, a little toothbrush. Twirl it, get some cells, yes. And then that's it, end of procedure. It is no longer necessary for men to reach their large hands into women's pelvises just to check it out, just to see what's cooking. And so what the pelvic then means, if you don't need the pelvic, then you don't need the accompanying sodomizing rectal exam with it. So all of this is no longer necessary. So you have to ask yourself, well, geez, was it ever necessary all those decades it was being done? I would suggest absolutely not. Certainly to my observation, when I was in medical school, I couldn't figure out the benefit of it. I mean, if we're testing all these ladies, we're doing all these pelvics, and we're never finding anything, what is the what is the benefit? Well, and the answer, of course, we now realize is none. So these physicians are, American College of Physicians is stepping forward and saying, hey, this should not be done. This should be stopped. No one's admitting to any criminal activity. Of course, but this should be stopped. Now, they're saying a pelvic exam is advisable for women who have vaginal discharge, abnormal bleeding, pain in the abdomen, or sexual dysfunction. Now, urinary difficulties is even, you have to wonder about that, because urinary tract infections, you just piss in a cup and look for an infection. It's pretty straightforward. Now, of course, the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecologists continue to recommend routine annual well woman visits. Now, obviously, obstetricians and gynecologists, that's their bread and butter. That's all they do. Every woman that comes in, instead of shaking their hand, they just do a pelvic exam. However, the American College of Physicians argues there's no clear evidence of benefit. The harm fear, anxiety, embarrassment, pain, discomfort, and false positive. That means finding a disease the patient doesn't really have outweigh any potential benefit of routinely conducted pelvic examinations on apparently healthy women. And so this recommendation is based on evidence on pelvic exams done from 1946 through 2014. It's about a 50-year check, actually 60-year. So they've looked over 60 years of pelvic exams and found no benefit. And they found that the pelvic examination on apparently healthy women rarely detects cancer outside the cervix or other treatable conditions. And the practice did not improve patient outcomes. In other words, even if they did find something wrong on a routine pelvic exam, the medical intervention applied did not improve the woman's clinical outcome. This means the lady just didn't benefit from it. In other words, rape. And so they're very, very clear about this. And, of course, this authored by Linda Humphrey, M.D. By the way, for anyone, to your information, more than half of all doctors are now female. And this might have a lot to do with the position now coming out saying, hey, these pelvic exams are not useful. And so the Annals of Internal Medicine, these are a group of doctors who treat heart disease and men, and sometimes some women too, they're saying, well, they're not really sure if these recommendations are going to change the way doctors do business. And so what they're saying then is this is not going to make a change in the way doctors do things. So you should know that this is not a beneficial thing. It often creates opportunities for medical intervention that are very painful, disfiguring, and not particularly beneficial. So what else is going on that, how else is the rape extended? Let's take a look at menopause. Now, doctors are giving guidelines for detecting how do you figure out if a woman is menopausal. So there's definitions. So the definition of menopause is the woman has not had a period, that means bleeding, for more than 12 months. It does not take a pelvic exam to diagnose that. Nevertheless, if you look at WebMD, this is what the doctors want, WebMD, on pelvic exam, the effects of menopause, which is gonadal hormonal depletion, they have a name word for this now, because they're now treating perimenopause, saying that these menopausal symptoms can occur up to 6 years before the first to final period. Well, let's cut to the chase here. What information are we going to get from the pelvic exam? So there's five pieces of information. Loss of estrogen, the vaginal skin can become redder. And the vaginal skin can become lighter or more pale. Wait a minute. So the pelvic exam can show the skin getting lighter or darker. So can just eliminate those two because there's not a unique piece of information indicating that menopause is there. The folds in the vaginal wall become smooth. The ovary is smaller in size, and you can't find it. It's not a positive finding, and the uterus becomes smaller. Now, the ovaries and uterus can actually be the same size. So these findings of a woman are not indicative. They're not specific. A woman's uterus can be smaller, and she's still not in menopause. The ovary size can diminish, and women can still not be in menopause. So these physical findings on the pelvic exam are what we call non-specific. So none of these findings on the pelvis, if you do them, you say, aha, this woman is in menopause. So the pelvic exam is not specific. It's not contributory. I mentioned fibroids is present, can be less symptomatic. Wait, less symptomatic means you can just ask the lady, are your fibroid symptoms getting less? So you don't need a physical exam to determine symptoms. In an older woman, a general loss of pelvic muscle tone occurs, sometimes manifest as prolapse of the organs. If a lady has prolapse, she'll tell you, something's falling out of my hole or something's falling out of my vagina. Again, you don't need a physical exam alone in an asymptomatic woman without any symptoms to determine this. Because the symptom the woman would have, and she would tell you. So a pelvic exam in a woman to diagnose menopause is what we would call in medicine non-contributory. In other words, it does not contribute to the diagnosis. And so what does that make it? You got it. It makes it rape. It makes it a very unpleasant, very difficult experience. I'll give you an example of what happened to one of my patients. I just closed my practice, and she was 70, at least 75 years old, and she was taking blood pressure medications. And so, of course, my practice was closed, so she had to find another doctor. And when she went to the other doctor, the doctor said, I will not prescribe your blood pressure medications unless you submit to a pelvic exam. So first of all, this is sexual touching, not voluntary, because the doctor is, what, threatening the patient with withholding medications unrelated to the pelvic exam. And so basically this patient was being menaced or threatened with rape. And this is something that that happens frequently. So this particular patient called me up on the phone, and she was just almost in tears, complaining that she didn't feel at her age that she needed a pelvic, number one, and number two, that the pelvic exam was related to any way to her blood pressure, which I have to agree to her with her, it wasn't. And so she did need her high blood pressure medications at the time, so she felt, and so I suggested she find a different doctor to get her blood pressure medications from. But this is the kind of thing going on there, where women are being held hostage, being coerced to submit to pelvic exams that are not of benefit to the woman, and this is simply a form of rape. Now, the medical societies, this is Medscape now, has identified some particularly useless tests. And again, one was cervical cancer screening for women 65 years of age and older. In other words, if you're over 65 or older, you're getting pelvic exams for menopause. You're basically being raped. And so this is a real issue. And this brings us also to the case of Dr. Levy. So I was looking on the internet to try and clarify just the real extent of this sexual violation that's going on. I came across the case of Dr. Levy. Okay, so Dr. Levy, it says, Johns Hopkins settles suit over secret photos of female patients. Johns Hopkins Medicine in Baltimore has agreed to pay $190 million to settle a class action lawsuit filed by up to 8,000 patients of a Johns Hopkins obstetrician gynecologist who took secret photos and videos during pelvic exams before committing suicide, according to the plaintiff's attorney in the case. This is July 22, 2014. We call this breaking news, school of what's happening now. And what happened was this physician was employed by Johns Hopkins for quite some time. And he's a young guy, 54 years old, actually the peak of his career. And this is absolutely shocking. These pictures were taken over a period, we think, of 1988 to 2013. We're talking over 20 years of sexually explicit photographs of women's bottom end. And what happened was Dr. Levy wore what appeared to be a pen camera around his neck while he examined patients. And somebody observed this. And on February 5th, his office was investigated, his physical office, and found to have an inordinate amount of recording equipment. And so on February 5th, he was suspended from the hospital. Now, his body was found at his home on February 18th. They discovered what was called at the time an exorbitant amount of digital files stored on computers and external hard drives at his home. This guy had so friggin' many pictures, he couldn't even store them on his computer. He needed an external hard drive, yes. And I'm telling you, ladies, when you go to be fondled by your doctor, you know, this is an example of just how far things can go. But even this guy wasn't taking pictures. What he was doing was deriving a tremendous amount of pleasure and personal gratification from doing many pelvic exams that were of no benefit to his patients. Now, because he committed suicide, the people who were harmed had recourse. That means they could legally sue Johns Hopkins. Had he not murdered himself, their legal recourse might have been limited to his particular malpractice limitation, and they might have had to sue one person at a time. But Mr. Levy fell on his sword, committed suicide, and so it's opened the floodgates for Johns Hopkins to pay $190 million. Now, Johns Hopkins is not any slouchy institution. I am sure that Johns Hopkins has, well, they have standards. And so you can imagine if Johns Hopkins, who has standards, has a doctor, we're going to guess, we're going to be generous, we're going to guess this is the only doctor in a Johns Hopkins staff doing this, has this going on. And I assure you, in other settings where there are no controls, or even less controls, there's a lot more of this going on. And so not only is a woman being raped, sexually touched under false pretenses, but now in this day and age, photographs with pictures possibly uploaded. In this case, Dr. Levy limited his pictures to hard drives as far as they know. Again, this is late-breaking news, so the full extent of it may not have been exposed. So in a statement, Johns Hopkins said, the settlement balances the concerns of plaintiffs with the obligations of the health system has to provide ongoing and superior care to the community. In other words, they made the largest settlement they think they could have that would allow them to stay in business. Now, a law enforcement investigation of Dr. Levy's secret recordings determined that the images were not shared. Yeah, right. I mean, I'm sure that their determination was that the images were not shared, but it's not clear to me that it's possible to determine, to make that determination in this day and age with technology being what it is. And so this is what women are up against. This is what they're exposing themselves to. And this article, a paragraph that I think sums it up very nicely, that breach of trust has been difficult to restore for Dr. Levy's former patients, so much so that many of them have stopped seeing obstetrician, gynecologists, and other physicians, according to Medscape Medical News. They are not convinced so that their privacy is ensured when they go into the medical system. They remain upset, anxious, and angry. Now, so you listeners, you don't have to wait for it to happen to you. You can just do what these people did. You can learn from their experience. And let's see what these people did. They stopped seeing obstetricians, gynecologists, and other physicians. Yes. Don't take your clothes off. Don't submit to the invasion. Just say no to rape. Now, a lot of, you know, there's a lot of ridicule going on out there. You know, oh, you should get yourself checked. You know, I say you can check your own self, you know, go into your bathroom or just crawl under your covers and do whatever kind of checking you think needs to be done. There is no evidence of medical benefit from being raped. There is no medical benefit to being raped. Despite reassurances from Johns Hopkins that Dr. Levy did not share patient images with others, many women still wonder who has seen what. And, of course, this uncertainty is abetted by Dr. Levy's suicide, which essentially short-circuited the criminal investigation. And they're saying it's hard to get closure when there's no justice for him. Well, I think he murdered himself, and that's pretty close to the best we could hope for. I mean, his offense is not punishable by murder, so he served out the most severe punishment on himself. So I would say he was punished. Now, this is real. All right. So in my chat room, it's very active here, and they are saying we've got some computer experts in the chat room. There is absolutely no way to determine that those photos were not shared. So there you have it. We have an expert opinion from the chat room that there's no way to determine that, and there isn't. There really isn't. And there is a lot going on in terms of, I won't say potential for abuse, but actual abuse. Now, there's another case that I want to mention, which happened in Syracuse. Syracuse is a hotbed of activity. We had a famous obstetrician and gynecologist in Syracuse, absolutely famous. And extremely, extremely popular. His name escapes me right now. But he was a doctor at the health center down the street from my office. And upon his death, the whole city nearly shut down. There were hundreds and hundreds of women weeping and crying over his coffin. And it was just an unmanageable situation. I remember it was a weekday because my office was open, and so I heard all about it. And so one of my patients came and said to me, you know, I used to be a nurse in his office. I thought, that's interesting. She said, yes. And she explained to me how he frequently had sex with his patients. They would be on the table in their stirrups, and he would insert what he would call a special speculum, which actually turned out to be his penis. And so ladies who enjoyed these sessions would simply schedule more appointments. And his more favorite patients, he kept their names and phone numbers in the top drawer of his pelvic table. And whenever he was having a desire or interest in the company of a particular patient, he would have his nurse call the patient to schedule an appointment. And so this actually went on for his whole career of many decades. In fact, he didn't even retire. He worked right up until the last. And so I think the tribal people had it right, that this thing that the missionaries were calling a pelvic exam was sexual touching. And that's exactly what it is. Now, many women think that they and their husband have this closed, mutually monogamous relationship, and then they go see the obstetrician gynecologist. And so the truth of the matter is, this is a problem. You know, this really is sexual touching, and that's all it is. Now, I don't know if I mentioned this before, but the fact that what we call the pelvic exam, what we call pap smear, is actually sexual touching, was brought home in medical school. We were told of the efforts to introduce pap smears to the Aborigines. The tribespeople objected to this, as they said it was improper sexual contact with a man other than the woman's partner, that this was not allowed in their society. It was frowned upon. And that what was really going on was that their women were being raped and sexually violated by these missionaries. And the missionaries used the Bible, and they used quite a lot of other coercive mechanisms. They did get some women to submit to pap smears, and they tried to upgrade it to a status symbol of being a modern woman to submit to a pap smear. But the Aborigines looked at this and said, well, looks like sexual touching to me. And they just absolutely were not refused and would not have pardoned it. And so we medical students were roundly instructed that this was a primitive notion. And, of course, the tribe over time submitted to pap smears with the help of missionaries and, no doubt, threats of hell and damnation, whatever other pressure the missionaries wanted to bring to bear, maybe even, who knows, the U.S. military. I just want to mention also, in medical school, it made me very uneasy, because when you do these tests like pap smears, for example, in pelvics, there was no plan to use the information. If the test came back abnormal, what would you do? Oh, repeat it. Well, wait a minute. Since no beneficial clinical action was taken based on the test and exams, it cannot be said that the information was medically necessary to advance the health of the woman. Hence, it was criminal activity, touching the sexual nature without consent, or just rape. And so we've covered the pelvic pap smear, the pelvic exam, but then there's the rectal exam. Now, the rectal exam, I have to tell you, as a doctor following the standard of care, I have done easily hundreds of rectal exams, easily. And this is a male and female thing. So rectal exams are done in men as well as women. So, again, the men and women are being sodomized slash raped in this case. And these are exams that just violate people. I'll never forget, I was training as a resident. I was an intern, actually, and I was in the surgeon's office because I worked with him in the hospital and also in his office. And so he would do the pre-surgery exams on his patients before surgery to make sure they're okay for surgery. And his surgery he did was a gallbladder surgery. So gallbladder, that's in the stomach abdomen area, for in case you guys don't know. That's towards the top of the abdomen. So you do the exam. At the end of the exam, you say, examine the belly. Turn the patient on his side and say, okay, now we're doing the rectal exam. Whip out his glove on, some KY jelly. Stick his finger up the person's butt. And so after one patient left, and he'd done a few rectals that day, I'd say at least four, I said, well, doctor, why are you doing the rectal exam? What's the benefit? So I get paid $10 more. And so if the only reason for doing a rectal exam is to get paid $10 more, and the rectal exam does not provide information that's a benefit to the patient or to the doctor in his treatment of the patient, then it's rape. It's rectal rape. That's what it is. And so the rectal exam is another issue. Now, they've done some studies on colon cancer, because that's what you're really worried about, right? You check and you're looking for colon cancer, and also you're checking the stool to see if there's any hidden blood. What they found is that checking the stool for blood alone is sufficient when combined with these colonoscopy guidelines that they have. So this is something that's really an extreme, widespread problem. And the real purpose of the rectal exam, I guess, is my opinion, you know, this is not from Dr. Love, I figured this one out all by myself. You know, the real reason of the rectal exam is to humiliate the patient, to lower their status, to make them fearful, to make them feel inferior to the doctor and more subservient. So we have here the rectal exam, which is really an act of domination, intimidation, and rape. Now, again, as I said, the rectal exam is a male-female thing. And so men are being violated, I think, just as much as women. Now, hysterectomy is another issue. Last week I told a joke that one lady said, I don't want to play the hysterical role with my doctor. And her friend said, I know what you mean, who wants a hysterectomy? But a lot of hysterectomies are done for reasons that are not of benefit to women. And women are often even harmed by them. Women who don't even need hysterectomies are often getting hysterectomies and getting their ovaries removed and getting hot flashes and mood swings. And it's absolutely destroying their relationships because it makes them unable to continue their affectionate behavior towards or with their spouse. For example, in my mother's case, she was fortunate they left her ovaries in place. She went to the doctor for a urinary tract infection. He treated it. She came back for another urinary tract infection after that. He treated her and said, but you know what? We could end these urinary tract infections by just doing a hysterectomy. And so the hysterectomy was actually an act of rape. I mean, what more intensive sexual touching can you imagine than to cut someone's sex organs open and remove them? And so nowadays, it's felt that doing a hysterectomy, recurrent urinary tract infections is not a reason to do hysterectomies. Again, but hysterectomies are still being done for many reasons that are questionable. Even worse, women are not being informed of the drastic change to their life when they have their uterus and ovaries removed. So hysterectomy is a huge, huge case of rape and devastation for women. And, of course, you have the breast exam. And in medical school, we could see this when the men would actually, the male students, would actually decide that they want to do breast exams on the younger patients, more enjoyable or something. But this type of inappropriate touching is extensive, and it is nothing but rape on a grand, grand scale. Well, I have a few minutes left. People who want to have questions, you can just click your question button if you're listening by phone. If you're in the chat room, I can just check out the questions in the chat room. Okay, we have a lot of questions in the chat room. But first, I just want to say with men, men are just being absolutely wholesale castrated by the medical industry. And what is shocking about this is that the industry gives men these drugs that cause impotence, and then they offer the treatment, which is Viagra or something along those lines. And so men are constantly being castrated with their blood pressure drugs, their diuretics. And again, these drugs are shown not to extend life. There may be some evidence that it might change what you die of, but there's no evidence it changes when you die. So that's the diuretics and high blood pressure. So if you're on blood pressure medicines, they're definitely messing with your sex life. And antidepressants, anti-anxiety drugs. So the diuretics, you couldn't do something if you wanted to. And with antihypertensives, anti-anxiety drugs, you don't even want to if you could. And so that's just a killer combination. Just to totally take away a man's sexual functioning and sexual drive. Of course, antihistamines, which got a stuffy nose, they'll unstuff your nose and destroy your sex drive and castrate you. Arthritis pills. Common ones like Anaprox, Naproxen, Indomethacin, heart medicines for your rhythm disturbances, antacids like H2 blockers like cimetidine, Zantac, Axid, the muscle relaxants, of course, prostate cancer medications. We're going to help your prostate by destroying your sex life. Okay. And, of course, chemotherapy drugs. And this is just shocking that so many drugs that are given absolutely wipe out a man's ability to have sex. And so you rape the woman and castrate the guy, and this is really an amazing medical advance. Okay, so let's take a look at some questions from our chat room. By the way, this is Healing with Dr. Daniels on the Rainbow Soul channel at Blake Radio. What cards do doctors have up their sleeves? I don't understand. What cards do doctors have up their sleeves? You know, doctors really don't have any cards up their sleeve, I don't think. A lot of this rape that goes on is, first of all, encouraged by the standard of care. So standard of care creates a standard where you're doing this sexual penetration, this sexual touching of this person, and you're doing it again and again and again and again and again, and you don't find anything abnormal. You don't find any way to use this information to benefit the patient. And then you turn to your instructor in medical school and you say, well, this is the 50th pelvic. I haven't found anything yet. Can we stop? And the doctor says, no, you need to get really good at doing this, so when you do find something, then you'll know what to do. And then you say, well, I think I found something. And he says, well, we don't really know what to do. Let's just leave it alone. Well, this is shocking that you can get raped and pay your rapist. And then make annual or monthly insurance premium payments to make sure the rapist gets paid. So you know, it's really it's difficult. And so really the only thing that you can do is to not submit to sexual touching. And no more than you would from a stranger. And realize that there's not any special body of knowledge imparted in the doctor where he can determine by touching you sexually something that's not already apparent by symptoms. In other words, if you're not having any symptoms, you're not having any problem in that particular area, then there is no reason to submit to sexual touching or penetration of any kind. Okay, so could this be medical pornography? The answer is yes. It would be medical pornography for a doctor to take pictures of and videotape the sexual organs of their patients in these exams and determinations, and then, I guess, watch them at a later date. Who knows? Watch them, publish them, sell them. Who knows what would happen to those things? But I think in today's modern medical setting, people who see a doctor cannot have any reasonable expectation of privacy. Why? Because records are now electronic, digital, and you know how easy it is to share digital information. That's number one. But number two, the HIPAA Act is very clear that whoever pays for the medical care or postures as having the possibility of paying for the medical care is entitled to those medical records without your consent. In other words, your insurance company is entitled to a copy of your medical records even if you pay for the medical care with your deductible and they did not contribute a penny to paying for it. So there is no reasonable expectation of privacy when you see a doctor in the United States in 2014. There can't be because of the digital nature of your chart and because of the laws giving access to a large number of people without any further consent on your part. And the doctor simply have you sign this HIPAA thing saying that you are aware of it. And now we find it's gone beyond that where certain doctors are creating video records for themselves and for their entertainment and for their own pleasure, and much to the detriment of their patients. And so if you're a shy kind of person and you don't think you want your business publicized, if you don't want to be violated, then the best thing is to stay home.
And the easiest way to stay home is to simply walk away from the whole thing, walk away from the whole health insurance thing. And if you decide you do want to get involved in the system, then do it on a cash basis only. And that's so important. Now, another thing which we can talk about in a future episode is all those guards in the hospital. What are they there for? All those guards in the hospital are there to basically keep you or your visitors from interfering with hospital profits. And so, in other words, keeping you from leaving prematurely before the doctor says so. So you need to really realize what you're walking into. You know, you're walking into a system of rape, a system of exploitation, a system of abuse and torture. And it's something that just devastates relationships, devastates families. I mean, a woman who's had a hysterectomy that totally changes her life, and a husband who takes cholesterol drugs that wipe out his sex drive, that's a marriage that is compromised. And, you know, we hear about the 50% failure rate in marriages, and I think we have to take a look at the continual rape and abuse of women as well as the castration of men, and that might be might have something to do with the lack of cohesiveness in his relationships. So that is the deal with what's going on with the rape of millions of American women. And there is no protection from this. It is not against the law. Once you walk into an office, it's something that you're confronted with. And the best way is to not go into the doctor's office, number one, or two, if you have to, keep your clothes on. I would definitely recommend keeping your clothes on. That's important. And if you do that, you'll definitely minimize your chances of becoming a victim of rape. Now, I work with a doctor in North Dakota, and he would stick objects into women's vaginas, and they would yell blood-curdling screams. And so I investigated, so what is all this screaming? And so the ladies told me. And so I explained to him that this was inappropriate behavior on his part, and these women, many of them felt like they were being raped, and this was his response. Rape? Not possible. I do all my pelvic exams with love. And so I told him, well, try to see it from the lady's position. Of course, the lady's position is what? Naked, laying on her back on the table. Yeah, that's her position. And so here's another joke. A lady says, at what point do they call it rape? And this is a patient asking this question. And her friend says, you passed it a long time ago. In other words, you know, it was rape with her first pelvic exam. And here's just a miscellaneous joke. I'm sicker than ever. I thought if I followed the rules, everything would turn out right. And the friend says, it has turned out right for the folks who made the rules. Now, essentially what's going on in the healthcare industry is the people who make the rules are benefiting and the patients are not. Patients are strictly prohibited from making rules of any kind. Well, with our next minute, I'd like to tell you next week's topic. For next week's topic, we're going to talk about advanced directives, medical power of attorney, what to do, how to do it, and why things are so darn complicated. So we will see you next week when we talk about advanced directives, what's it all about.